This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au. Watch out!
Uprise Radio on 3CR with your hosts, Koshin. My name is Koshin, and I'm here with my co-host and comrade, Zan.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here. We are on the unceded and sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri people, and pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. And this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Today we have a special episode lined up to talk about Australia's arms export-import industry and its connection to Israel with some contemporary reporting. A lot of stuff has happened in the last week. Yeah.
And the overall theme of the 30 minutes is, I don't have time to explain.
Yeah. If there is, if you can just keep one sentence in the back of your head for the show, it's, we don't have time.
There's so. A lot to say, and we're going to try say it very fast, and it's also quite aggravating material.
Yeah. We're going to keep tensions low in the studio. We're going to keep nice and calm while we talk about this. We are not going to get political. We don't deal with politics on this show.
No, and nor do the organisers of the recent expo on Gadigal Country, the Indo-Pacific 2025 International Maritime Exposition.
Great name. What's the alternative? Sea power?
Yeah, that one. I don't want to give any more platform to.
Yeah, yeah. They should come up with it. That one's a bit too wordy. Yeah, as a lot of people have probably seen, there was a protest out the front of this expo recently, and the police were quite brutal in their response, very liberal and open with their use of counter-protest measures such as pepper spray, physical pushing and shoving. Yeah, it was put down very strongly. The New South Wales police clearly have a very strong stance these days. They seem to be getting more and more aggressive in how they deal with protests.
And using a justification of community safety as being involved in somehow using this type of force against the community, which seems very contradictory.
Yeah, yeah. I think really, clearly shows which community they are serving, who they are serving. Is it regular working people or is it the elites who want to schmooze while looking at display weapons? I think that question is answered, in their own statements.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing the way that this event itself was also defended, both with like the use of the police force in defending the safety of the community, which seems to involve quite specific members of the community, but also defending the choices that were made to include lots of weapons companies at this expo that have been subject to a lot of public scrutiny given their potential complicity in war crimes. And a spokesperson for the event, when asked about inviting companies such as Israel's largest weapons manufacturing company, Elbit Systems, they said that we don't deal with politics, which is very strange because the last time I checked, I thought national security was political.
Also, just to clarify, I think I didn't explain in the intro, the focus of the protest was the involvement of Israeli companies, specifically Elbit Systems and Rafael, I believe, they had stalls and they were the main focus of the protest. It's ridiculous to say that it's apolitical to invite or to allow Israeli weapons companies to show off their goods and try to make sales when I would think that that would be political. That is patently political, and really shows the use of terms like apolitical very paper thin and obviously just used to disguise what is acceptable politics and what is unacceptable politics. If something is hegemonically political, if it's bipartisanly supported, suddenly it's apolitical and it's not to be disturbed. I think most people would find it political to allow Israeli weapons companies to make sales.
And I think the degrees of separation that have been kind of postured around this event I found really interesting. So there's AMDA, who is apparently responsible for organizing the event, and they've been behind other weapons expos such as Land Forces and Avalon Airshow, where companies such as Elbit have again been invited to display their goods and to develop industry connections here. And there's this, I guess, confusion around how the Australian government is also involved in allowing these people or these companies to come and trade. And I think it's interesting how unclear this is over whether the government has responsibility and accountability towards who is invited to these events or whether they just leave it up to AMDA, and whether AMDA takes that responsibility and shoulders that responsibility. And I'm not, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Who's going to be responsible for this?
Chris Minns, the Premier of New South Wales, tried to dodge responsibility. He tried to claim that it wasn't up to him. He sort of tried to do the classic, none of the bad things are my fault, but all of the good things are they're mine to be celebrated. But yeah, everyone seems to want to disguise their responsibility. No one wants to put their hand up and say the buck stops with us when it comes to Israeli weapons companies. Which I think ties into the other major story of the week, which is the quiet tightening of restrictions around weapons exports by the Australian government towards Israel, and the lack of fanfare, the lack of a big press conference to announce this, I think shows that there's a strange sort of silence around any trade with Israel, back or forth, from the government, state or federal. I find it odd that they really just don't like making public statements either way. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, where to begin on thoughts on this? I think it's interesting the way that this has gone about and the timeline of it. There was the leak from the Nightly a few days ago around a document from Defence Export Controls around new restrictions on the 4th of November, which is around restrictions going from material from so-called Australia to the State of Israel. And it's coming at a point just before the ICJ makes a final confirmation decision around genocide and Israel. And the reasons for this restriction and this new ban are being kept confidential due to reasons of national security and being commercial in confidence, which I think is quite strange that those two things are being put together in a way where it could be one or the other, and the public is not kind of allowed to know which one it is. Is it for financial capital and gain? Is it for national security? They seem to be very different motives. But at the same time, as I'm saying that, I'm like, capitalism. Yeah. It's like the military industrial complex. It is actually one thing. And so maybe it's kind of bang on that national security and commercial confidence is just one thing.
Yeah, it's the DFAT department. Foreign affairs and trade are just interlinked. They really should just roll it all up with defense. Have defense and trade just be one department. They might as well. I agree with everything you just said.
And the idea that if something is to be commercial in confidence, that gives greater precedence for protections than protection of international law and human rights and violating international law. It seems that surely commercial interests should be on some type of moral scale that maybe I haven't found the paperwork for, but I really hope is out there.
You would think that it would be pretty easy to make it clear in your statement that you think that commercial interests come below in the list of priorities. They would be below international law and morality, basic morality.
Being complicit in genocide.
Yeah, but the fact that they're kind of put side by side, I think is, it makes it hard for you to imagine that these people do think of it as separate. It does seem like they think of commercial ventures, commercial interests, and complicity in genocide is all just being part of the same. They're on the same playing field. They're all as equally important.
Yeah. Another interesting part of this development is, and I will say, we're talking about the negative things, but I feel like we will give space to the positive because we are very optimistic, positive people. Yep. We're known for that.
Yep. Credit where credit's due. Restricting trade. restricting export of military items to Israel is good. It gets a gets a big thumbs up. So if they want to keep doing more of that, they will. We will do the most glowing episode. We will do the best, happiest episode about the incredible, beautiful leadership of the Labour government if they do a full, full embargo sanctioning regime on Israel. But until then, this gets one thumbs up. It's pretty good. It's a good. It's a step in the right direction. It could be better. Room for improvement.
Yes. So, while it is a step in the right direction in terms of there being new bans and restrictions, I think it's very important to note that this is happening at a point at which AUKUS is being developed. And so there is a really good backdoor for exports to go through the US, through the UK, to Israel. And that licensing and regulation is very opaque. And there's a lot of license-free agreements that are being put forward. There's a huge amount of money. And the export permit regulations themselves are also very unclear. I spent an immense amount of time today going through all of the public documents I can find around, you know, public risk assessments being made clear that it's been duly looked at that these things that could be lethal, non-lethal, dual use in what makes up an arm or a component of an arm to ensure that they're not going to be used in a way that could be complicit in genocide. But none of that reporting is publicly available. It appears to be either self-reported or coming from media. And so how the public is meant to have a sense of safety and security that the government is not continuing to further trade and not put proper risk assessments in place and make them publicly available doesn't leave one feeling awfully good.
Mm. And also, I mean, what we do know about their evaluations aren't great. I mean, classically, the famously Penny Wong claiming that bomb doors are a non-lethal item for export on the F-35, I mean, just shows that...
If the F-35 could actually be totally okay without the door. Yeah. Like, it's just an embellishment.
If you're going to say that the bomb door is a non-lethal component, then you're getting philosophical with your definitions, because then, I mean, what is lethal at that point? If you break down everything into its basic components, nothing's really lethal. A trigger isn't a lethal component. The trigger doesn't do anything. If their evaluations can lead to the conclusion that a bomb door on an F-35 is a non-lethal component, then I don't have a lot of faith that their conclusions on other items that are still classified are much better than that.
I think getting philosophical is exactly what I would like to do, because I think the same thing applies on the other end, in which there's also a very specific definition of not only what is considered lethal and non-lethal, but what is considered part of the arms trade and what is considered to be material or immaterial. And I think this has become really clear when trying to look into what constitutes a conventional arm. And the arms trade treaty includes definitions of parts and components. And the Defense Trade Control Act also includes intangible military dual use goods. But there is just this acceptance that financial capital is not considered part of a capability to assemble arms, as if we could all assemble these arms without the money that we are sending to weapons companies to do so.
Mm.
Which I just don't think that we can. Yeah. I think the money is, it's literally bankrolling it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not considered part of a capability of assembling it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that that's definitely what ties these two stories together in such an interesting way, is that they're quietly rolling back or quietly restricting what weapons they feel comfortable sending to Israel, but they violently protecting their ability to buy weapons from Israel and send money to Israeli weapons companies that would then use those profits to create more weapons for the state of Israel that would then be used in the West Bank and in Gaza and across the Middle East in more Israeli war crimes. The money is an essential component of the trade. If it's not a two-way embargo, it's strange that they don't feel that there's any conflict there or any contradiction that they're, you know, great. We're not sending our limited weapons export industry to Israel, which is not the, you know, it's not a big, we don't have a massive export industry. The big part of our trade with Israel in weapons is the purchasing of weapons, is us buying them from Israel. If we wanted to slow down our trade with Israel, that would be the side to do it on. But they don't seem to see that there's any problem with sending money to these companies. It's just as if they're, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a strange moral framework to work off, where you can see kind of one part of the trade as to be excluded and condemned, but the other half of the trade seems to be fine. Mm. As in, yeah, just very recently, it was published on the 13th of October, actually was made a thing a month earlier, but there seems to be quite a lag in when these contracts are initiated and when they're made public. But there was $19 million from given to light weapons and ammunition from the Department of Defense to Elbit Systems. And that's being used here.
Mm, yeah, we're very comfortable as a country importing Israeli weapons and ammunition to arm our police force. It's not even military. I mean, we could do a separate episode on the militarization of the police, I guess. But on paper, they're a police force. They're a federal police force. And we're arming them using Israeli weapons, Israeli ammunition. And that's not part of our restriction. That's not going to be slowed down. That's full steam ahead.
I want to try really hard for the last few minutes to be optimistic about this development and be like, this is also potentially really good, and hopefully this will mean a lot more restrictions and things will get better.
I have optimistic news.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad you saved it.
I was looking through Elbit Systems weapons, small arms and ammunition that they export. They have green ammunition. It's environmentally friendly ammunition.
Everything's going to be okay.
It's green. It's green technology. And they put the green in quotations, which I thought was funny. Awesome. As if they were saying, it's green.
It's like they don't even really trust that it's green.
That's too bizarre even for me to touch on.
Composting weapons.
Yeah, what are we doing here? We're doing green transition for small arms. I think
this ties also to Elbit Systems' presence in the natural disaster industry here with the Center of Excellence in NAM, which is very much about bushfires and Elbit Systems' role in the research and tech around bushfire recovery and prevention and response. And yeah, there's a lens of that also seems to be around, green. The outdoor world, what does that mean to them?
I think it kind of shows the...
Maybe they're vegan weapons.
Yeah, they could be, yeah. I think it shows that climate change, like everything else, if it's tackled within the bounds of our political economic system, will not actually solve anything. I mean, it's green technologies that are for warfare will not save us. Yeah, that's my That's my point that I don't have time to get into.
So yes, gotta wrap because up the show. As you've noticed, we don't have time to explain.
We don't have time to get into that. I want to give a quick, big mashallah to Zoran Mamdani, the new mayor of New York. Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, yes. There are elections going on.
Yeah, they just had their... Yeah, it's so weird to be invested in a municipal election in a city in another country. But, you know, I mean, it could have bigger ramifications down the line. But it seems cool. I mean, yeah, good news. One bit of good news in the Imperial Corps that, you know.
All... Yeah, I'm just going to say Dick Cheney.
Yep, Dick Cheney.
That's all.
Yep. So... Yep, and what I'm about to say is a reference to Zoran Mamdani winning. You just got to take the victories. You got to take the little wins, even if it's not the best thing in the world. There's not a lot of good news going on. Just anytime something, even if it just makes you feel a little bit of joy, just take it for a second. Just take a moment and just enjoy it. That's the advice.
Oh, I have one last piece of good news. I saw someone driving the other day before Halloween, and they had strapped a fake skeleton into the passenger seat of their car just for public laugh.
Incredible. That's good stuff. It's spooky season. The spooky season, folks. Okay. Thank you very much. We will see you in a couple of weeks. And we're going to go out with Ceasefire by Eagle versus Drone. Did I introduce that right?
Hell yeah.
Whole nation in a concentration camp. Passport stamped black. Entry denied, lack of medical supplies stacked at the wall where we wait but can't hold back. But don't expect us to wait quietly, persistently, day and nightly. An international movement against the powers that be, the stand between those that are free and those that should be. Never letting complacency cause a vacancy in consciousness. From the river to the sea. From the river to the sea. From the river to the sea. Palestine must be free. From fear life, it's a drone strike. Don't let the empire take your life. Boom. Boom. Media distraction, living on rations, no reaction, kill the assassin. Boom. Land invader, perpetrator, genocidal instigator. Taking action.